Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. The Send It John Bowes podcast starts right now. Hello and welcome. Welcome and hello. So I decided earlier this year that I was going to start answering our comments on our YouTube channel in a video format instead of trying to go in and type all of them because we just get so many of them. I don't always get time to go through and answer every single little one. And I figured I might as well go ahead and turn this into a podcast because that way people can listen to it on their way to work or while they're doing chores around the house. And if you want to watch the video version, you are more than welcome to do that here on YouTube as well. So the way this is going to work is we're going to pick a video from the YouTube channel and we're going to go through and just on that one video answer as many questions as we can that are relevant to the topic at hand. Might go off on some tangents here and there because I'm kind of wild like that. Now, the video that we're going to focus on today is probably my most controversial video that I have ever made. And it is the one titled Lies and Myths About Flow Pods on a John Boat. And in that video, I talked about some of the things that I have seen and heard and read on the internet, all these things that people think that you have to do or can't do when you're installing float pods on a John Boat. And I went through and debunked some myths. I confirmed that some were true. And I gave my personal advice on what you need to do if you're going to put float pods on your John Boat. So we'll go through as many questions as we can on this particular video because this one got a lot of views and it created a lot of commentary. Now, this video is almost 3 years old. It's got 638,000 views and over 1,000 comments. Now, we're not going to hit all 1,000 comments in this podcast because I don't think anybody wants to sit here and listen to me talk for 9 hours straight. And I don't know if my voice can last that long either. And before we jump into our podcast topic, I want to take a second to thank our very first podcast sponsor. And that is going to be a really cool apparel company called Twitch Paws, or TTP Outdoors for short. I met the owner of the company at a fishing show not too long ago. I picked up some of his apparel and I actually really, really like it. All their fishing apparel is UPF 50 rated, so it will protect you from the sun. A lot of their fishing shirts have the hoods on the back of them so that you can protect the back of your neck and the top of your head when you're out there fishing in the blazing sun in the summertime. So their apparel is not only useful, it's actually really comfortable. They're like that silky feeling, like really breathable fishing, like athletic type material. But what I like about it, it's not like that super tight, like muscle shirt. It's not squeezing you all over the place if you get it in the right size. I've got a few of the Twitch Paws shirts and I wear them weekly here at work. I actually really like them. I would be wearing one right now, but it's cold as crap here in Georgia. So I got a hoodie on tonight. They have a lot of really cool contemporary designs and camo and all kinds of stuff. But what I really love about the company is they're not geared towards bass fishing. They support all kinds of fishing, but the owner in particular is really big into saltwater inshore fishing, which I like. And even though bass fishing is cool, and if companies want to go after the bass fishing industry, that's perfectly fine. But unfortunately, I'm not a bass fisherman anymore, and I don't want every piece of clothing that I own to have a bass on it. So I'm pumped to see a new apparel company hit in the market that's actually offering some different designs that are more universal for all types of fishing and not just screaming bass fishing all the time. And the good folks at Twitch Paws were nice enough to not only sponsor the podcast, they are going to give you guys a awesome discount code. I will leave the discount code here on the screen and down in the show notes if you're watching this on one of the podcast platforms. But if you use that code at checkout, it will save you 10% site-wide. Anything on their website, 10% off. So that is super nice of them. I am glad to have them on as a channel sponsor. And don't forget, in all the YouTube videos, we have other channel sponsors as well. We got Tiny Boat Nation. They have a coupon code there. You got Freedom Lube for gun oil and reel oil and fishing lube and all kinds of stuff that they make. They have a coupon code there as well. You got One Hit Wonder Paint, coupon code for them. There's a bunch of them. Just make sure if you're on one of the YouTube videos, go down in the description and you check out those coupon codes. On to our topic for the podcast, our very first comment at the top of the page. I love your execution of telling people how stupid they are on the internet. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I do enjoy telling people that they are not that bright on the internet. That is One of the problems that I see on YouTube these days, there's too many people that are driven by money and trying to get popular instead of actually telling the truth. I like to be humble and honest and tell you, if something sucks, it sucks. If something's good, it's good. And if people are lying to you on Bookface and Instagram, I'm going to tell you that they're lying to you. But I'm not only just going to tell you, I'm going to try my best to show you what I've learned and why I think that they're, you know, full of crap. Next comment says, I can learn a lot from you. I wondered how 3M 5200 would work on the inside of the boat. That's a great question. I do get quite a few questions about 3M 5200. That is like the industry standard best adhesive slash sealant that money can buy. And I say that because it is not cheap. 3M charges a premium and a half for their 3M 5200. If you've never used it before, get ready because it's almost like anti-seize. Once it's out of the bottle, it's going to be everywhere on your face, on your hat, on your shirt, on your shoes. It's going to go everywhere. That's just part of using 3M 5200. But it is amazing stuff. It works very, very well. I have used it on quite a few projects. Actually, in my boat, I had a hole in the bottom of the boat. And I ended up patching over it with like a sheet of, I want to say it was 090 aluminum. And it was a hole, you know, that somebody had drilled through the bottom of the boat, probably an inch and a quarter, inch and a half or so. And they had done that for a live well setup at one point. So what I did is I took that 3M 5200 and I drew a big circle all the way around that hole. And then I put that piece of 090 sheet aluminum on top of it. And then I sealed the edges of that 090 aluminum and threw a couple of rivets in there to hold it in place. And my boat has not leaked one drop from where I put that 5200 in there. Now, I've had some loose rivets that, if you guys saw the last video I did where I fixed some stuff in my boat, I had some leaking rivets and I had to go back and fix those by replacing the rivets. But that area that I put that 5200 never, ever once had a leak. Now, if you're watching this on YouTube, you are seeing that I am pouring myself a glass of bourbon. For those that don't know me, I'm kind of a bourbon nerd slash bourbon collector. I actually do more bourbon collecting than I do bourbon drinking. So if you are watching this on one of the platforms where you can leave a comment and you are into bourbon, tell me what you like and what you don't like. I'd love to hear your comments. Now, also, I'll throw in here real quick before we get back into answering some of these questions. If you're not familiar with my other podcast, me and Ryan do a podcast on the TBN channel called The Drain Plug. And in every single podcast, we do bourbon reviews. Sometimes we do rye reviews, but most of the time it's bourbon. Me and Ryan are both kind of bourbon nerds. So if you're interested in that, I will leave a link in the description here on YouTube, or if you're on one of the podcast platforms, I'll leave it down in the show notes so you can go check out my other podcast over there. But on this one, we're checking out the Frey Ranch Farm Strength Uncut. This is a pretty cool backstory to this. If you've never heard of Frey Ranch, they make some really awesome bourbon. This one is 60.88%, 121 proof as a small batch, and it is absolutely delicious. We reviewed this not too long ago on our other podcasts. If you have not yet tried a Frey Ranch, definitely check them out. So back to questions. Somebody commented, said, I was thinking about subscribing and then saw the LSU sign in the background. Now I am definitely subscribing. And for anyone that doesn't know me, I'm a huge LSU fan. I was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I unfortunately live in Georgia now, but I have always been an LSU fan. I wish I could have gone to school there, but out-of-state tuition was way too expensive. Otherwise, I absolutely would be an LSU alumni right now. So the next question we got is, as a previous boat mechanic, I can attest that 3M 5200 is just as good as bolting. We would use that stuff on the underwater gear on like Mastercrafts, and we would literally have to take a sledgehammer to it to get it to break loose. And sometimes it would even break gel coat and fiberglass instead of the 5200. So not really a question there. It's actually a statement kind of backing up what I have said about glue and float pods on the back of your boat. 3M 5200 is literally the strongest adhesive I have ever seen in my life working on John boats. When you add rivets on top of the 5200 to help hold those float pods on, I honestly think it is a great way for people that don't have the money to go get it welded or don't have a welding setup to weld it on themselves. The glue and the rivets is a great way to put float pods on your boat. I'm sorry, people can hate all they want to. And we're going to be doing an upcoming video probably in the next month or so on the YouTube channel, kind of giving a 4-year update on those pods. They've been on the back of my boat. I've been using them. And one of the things that brought up so much controversy in this video is at the beginning of the video, I picked up the back of the boat by the float pods. And I was talking a bunch of crap, just trying to, you know, get some stuff off my chest about people that had talked so much junk about me gluing and riveting these float pods on the back of my boat. And in the process, you can see that the float pods actually moved a little bit. They flexed because the transom skin is super thin. Of course, it's going to flex. But where I had put 5200 on the gap between the back of the transom and the float pod, it stretched a little bit and people were like, oh my God, it's cracking. You can see it right there. So when that video went live and people saw it, I caught absolute hell from everybody about that 3M 5200 stretching just a little bit and showing that it was kind of cracking. They can hate all they want to. The glue, the 5200 glue works amazing. It is great. And when I picked up the back of that boat, it did exactly what 3M 5200 is designed to do. It's supposed to be a strong bond adhesive and sealant, but it also has a lot of flexibility to it. And we'll show this in a video when I do the up close on the update, the 4-year update video. But what you see when that crack happens, it's not really a crack, it's just the 5200 stretching, but I painted over the top of it. And what the actual cracking part that you see is not the 5200 splitting apart. It's actually the paint cracking because it's stuck on top of 5200 and I moved it a good like half inch away from the transom skin of the boat. We'll definitely dive more into that in the upcoming video, but that is what a lot of these comments are going to be about. Hey, quite a few comments in here where people were laughing about how I made fun of, what's his name on TikTok, the Cajun dude, Stale Cracker. People were like, you gotta throw some While We Wait, We Hydrate in there. We might do that in a future video. I make fun of him because he's just a little ridiculous on TikTok, but I actually really do like watching his TikTok. He's a good dude and seems to do some good content. I have another comment in here. Somebody said, every question I ever had about float pods, you answered. Thank you. But that is exactly why I make these videos, is so that people can get better educated with some real science back behind it and some real experience other than just, you know, listening to these yahoos on Facebook trying to tell them what to do. Because I see a lot of posts on Facebook and Instagram about putting float pods on a boat and people get just the most craziest answers to why they should or shouldn't do it. And that's, I took the time to make this particular video to dispel some of those myths. There were a lot of them were absolute garbage. So another comment I saw on here was actually from Fish and Stuff. If you're not familiar with Fish and Stuff, I didn't even know he watched my YouTube channel. That's really cool. Fish and Stuff is a big YouTube channel, and the guy does a lot of like budget hacks for fishing lures. And I've seen videos where my favorite video that he ever did was the do-it-yourself planer boards and like some of his PVC pipe hacks and stuff, and like where what you can buy at Harbor Freight that's good for budget fishing stuff. He's got a really, really good channel. But anyways, he wrote, love the channel name. You're funny too. They do improve the hole shot and support heavier motors so your boat sits more level. And he is almost 100% correct on this. Out of all the different side effects, well, let's back up for just a second. If you're putting float pods on a John boat, there's only one reason that you would ever put them on there, and that's because you're doing something stupid with your boat that you probably shouldn't be doing, and you're putting a Band-Aid on it to fix it. You should never, ever, ever put float pods on your John boat with the intention of them giving you a better hole shot, or the intention of them gaining you more speed, or with the intention of them making your boat more stable, because none of that stuff is true on every single build. Now, with that said, the hole shot improvement is a very common side effect of putting float pods on a John boat. It's not like that on every single boat, and it's not like that with every single design of float pods. I've heard some stories where hole shots were greatly improved. I've heard some where it was not. In my particular case, I run a mud motor on my boat most of the time. And with every mud motor I've tried, I didn't notice any difference because most of the mud motors that I run are pretty high and low end torque. They already have a substantial hole shot as it is, and they get up on plane pretty quick because they have that torque to push the boat up onto the surface of the water. So don't go into putting float pods on your boat with that as your main goal, because that's not the main goal of float pods. The main goal, or the reason that you would put float pods on your boat, is because your boat is too small for all the weight that you're trying to put into it. Specifically, weight in the back of the boat. And most of the time that comes from people putting outboards on their boat that are not rated for their boat. They're way too heavy. Or you got an older boat like mine that's real thin and is only designed to hold like maybe a 25 or a 30 horsepower outboard. And it can definitely handle a bigger one. But when you put a bigger outboard on the back of the boat, and then, you know, a big chunky man like me in the back of the boat that weighs 250 pounds, the back end of the boat wants to sink down. What you really need to do in that situation is get a bigger boat. But I understand that's not always a thing for people. Like, some people get these boats for really, really cheap deals and they don't want to spend a whole lot of money on them. They don't want to get rid of them, or they can't get rid of them because they don't have a title for it anymore, or it's just not worth getting rid of because they'll never get any money out of it. Like, those are all reasons that I would go through the hassle and extra expense of putting float pods on a boat. But 9 times out of 10, when I see these, comments and stories on Facebook and people asking questions, they're trying to put float pods on these itty bitty teeny tiny boats, and they want to put like a 92 stroke on the back. And I'm like, no, dude, it's not going to work the way that you think it is. It will lift the back of the boat up, but it can negatively affect performance as well, especially if you don't install them correctly. And that's one of the things that we talked about in the video, is the proper installation method. And I've done a lot of research over time about different manufacturers and the way they want you to put their float pods on. The ones that I put on my boat are beaver tail pods, and they recommended that I put them flush with the bottom of the boat, but as long as the pod exited the rear of the boat at a little bit of an angle, so that when the boat is sitting in the water, the pods are full contact with the water. But then as soon as you get up on plane and you start moving, the pods actually come out of the water and they're not even touching anything. The only thing touching is the bottom of the back of the hull. Then that pod kind of swoops up and away from the back of the transom. And then once I get up on plane, I've showed it on video a couple of times, the water scoots right underneath the pod. And if it's even touching the pod at all, it's very, very minimal. But like Fish and Stuff said, that's what you're looking for when you go to put pods on your boat in the first place, is you want it to sit more level because you've got too much weight, or you got too small of a boat with too much weight in it, and that back end is squatting down. Really cool that he was here on my YouTube channel and watching my videos and leaving comments. That's pretty awesome. He's got a very large channel, and I'm surprised to see him actually taking the time out to do comments on other people's channels. So if you watch this, I greatly appreciate it. And I appreciate what you do for the YouTube community. You've shared a lot of really good budget ways to get into fishing and expand your fishing and work on boats. And just love your content, dude. Next comment/question that I got was actually a user experience. And this is actually pretty cool that this guy took the time to write all this. So I'll go through it briefly. He said, I do have to give you credit for even finding out about all these things. I didn't even know that they existed until I saw one of your videos. I immediately ordered a set of medium pair from Backwater Incorporated out of Minnesota and installed them on my Landu Sport 10-foot 7. It says 10. I'm assuming that's 2010. So it's a Sport 2010 17-foot boat. Mine were built beautifully and expertly welded, blah, 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 blah. He talks about how great they were. He said, I mounted them just like you have yours in your boat. Basically, design of the pods is already there, and I just mounted them down to the bottom at the transom and out to the edge of the hull. It was as if they were made for my boat. I agonized about how to secure them because I didn't want to spoil the integrity of the airtightness of the pods. We'll cover that here in just a minute. Nor did I want to risk burning through the hull welding them on. The hull thickness at the transom is about 16 gauge, I'm guessing. So I thought and thought and decided to order 2 locking watertight deck hatches that were about the right size to fit the top of the pods. I cut the tops out of the pods and through bolted them through the transom using 5/16 stainless steel bolts with flat washers, fender washers, and nylon nuts, all stainless steel. I also used the 2 pieces that were left over from the cutouts on the top of the pods to make 2 backing plates inside the transom that are shaped to fit the little bit of dead rise that the hull has. Also, like you said, I used a generous beading of 5200 around all the through bolts and the perimeter of the pods, like 2 passes, and then used the rest of it to run a line of, he said, air quote, caulk around the tops of the pods, which is exactly what I did. We'll talk more about that once I get done with this comment. He said, maybe a little bit of overkill, but they are absolutely bonded and fixed to the hull. The flotation they provide at the very aft end of the boat and to the outside of the boat has made a completely different boat out of mine. Even with the weight of the motor, fuel tanks, battery, oil reservoir, and everything, including people at the back of the boat, the flotation is unbelievable. I will say that at rest, the pods are particularly underwater or flush with the surface of the water. Mine are that way too. The boat is also much more stable in roll, both at rest and at speed. I consider this modification to be the very best thing that I've ever done to the boat, and made the boat much safer and far more enjoyable to use. No penalty in performance, maybe even a little bit better in getting up on plane, and yet my tilt trim is still very effective. I sealed the hatches real well, and they don't leak a drop. Best thing I ever did to that little boat. All right, so first off, I'm really glad that this guy took the time to leave all this stuff in a comment, because it brought up a bunch of really good points, so we'll kind of go through them one by one. First thing is, he used stainless steel bolts instead of rivets. Now, when I bought my pods from Beavertail, he bought the Backwater version, which I've seen pictures of them. I've never seen the Backwaters in person, but they look very similar in design to the Beavertails. So I'm fairly certain we're comparing apples to apples here. But when I got my Beavertail pods, in the instruction manual, it said that if you're not going to weld the pods on, they recommended that you cut a hole in the top of the pod and through bolt them through the transom with stainless steel hardware, and then make you a little cover plate out of aluminum, put it back on top of the pod, use some kind of sealer or silicone, and you can use some self-tapping screws to bolt that in. They did not mention anything about those watertight deck hatches. That is a brilliant idea, and I may do that on another boat with pods in the future, because I really, really like that idea. You can get those little round, like 6-inch kayak covers. They're plastic, but they have a watertight like gasket on the back of them, and you just use a big hole saw, drill that hole on the top of the pod so that you can get to the inside and actually bolt them in. And then you put that little hatch in there and it kind of unscrews. So that's a really good way to do the install that I never thought of. So thank you very much for telling us about that. The stainless hardware was one of the things that I got a whole bunch of negative comments and drama about on this video and in my original float pod video. People were absolutely freaking out for putting stainless steel on aluminum. I work on a lot of boats here at the shop, and I can tell you that every boat that I have ever worked on from the factory that was worth a crap had stainless steel hardware in it. And very rarely do I ever see any issues with stainless steel hardware and aluminum corroding. If they did, it was minimal and it was easy to clean up. Usually they just form some kind of like white powdery, almost like baking soda type powder on the surface of the aluminum, but I never really see any pitting with stainless steel. Not saying that it can't happen, and it's probably worse if you're in a saltwater environment, but I'm mostly freshwater, so I don't really worry too much about putting stainless steel bolts and stainless steel hardware into an aluminum boat. If you're super freaking worried about it, what you can do is you can use something like dielectric grease, or you can coat the aluminum before you put the bolts in by painting it. So that way you got some paint in between the surface of the aluminum and the surface of your stainless hardware to keep from, hopefully, to keep that corrosion down. Not saying that it can't happen or that it won't happen. It very well may possibly happen at some point, but in my experience, it's not enough to worry about. So I have absolutely no issues using stainless steel bolts and stainless steel screws, stainless steel hardware in an aluminum boat. Now, one thing I will caution you about with stainless, and I have to get on to people here at shop all the time about it. When you install stainless steel hardware in your aluminum boat, you cannot use the Ugga Dugga method. You cannot use impacts. You cannot use electric drills to run the nuts down, because stainless is very susceptible to heat. And when you put your little 12 volt or 18 volt DeWalt Milwaukee whatever wrench onto that nylon lock nut and you go to zip it down, you can almost guarantee that if you try to take that thing back off, the bolt is going to be heat soaked. And it will more than likely break while you are trying to get that nut off instead of actually getting the nut off. Do stainless steel hardware by hand. Use a hand wrench or a hand socket, a screwdriver, whatever you can. Because if you go to put a nut and a bolt through something in your boat and you put it on with an electric impact or a pneumatic impact, you ain't getting it back off in one piece. You're more than likely going to destroy that hardware. So something to keep in mind. The next thing that he talked about that I wanted to kind of hit on real quick was running a caulk line around the outside of the pods. I don't know if that was 100% necessary. I think I had enough 3M5200 around the bolts, and well, on my boat, it was rivets. So I had enough 3M5200 around the rivets plus the rivets to kind of squeeze into that material. I wasn't really worried about them leaking. I did the sealing around the pods more for looks, because I didn't want to have a big like gap line going all the way down the side of the boat up next to the transom. And it was more of just a, you know, make it look sexy, make it look professional instead of actually sealing anything. So yeah, you probably did help seal it some. I don't know if it's 100% necessary, and it's not something I would lose any sleep over. Now, another thing that he talked about is the improved performance. Like I said, it's not guaranteed that on every single pod installation, you're going to get improved performance. A lot of them do. And and that's great, but don't expect it because not all of them do. But one thing that he mentioned was side-to-side stability. He said that it's much more stable in roll. That is probably more than likely a placebo effect. He thinks that that is actually happening because in reality, the only way to make a boat more stable is to widen it, not lengthen it. And that's what you're doing when you're adding pods. You're making the boat longer. And the pods do not affect the side-to-side stability of your boat at all. If you think that it does, you're imagining stuff because you spent money on pods. I'm sorry. But the only effective way to really add side-to-side stability to, especially a John boat, is to get a wider John boat or to make your boat wider, which is not very easy to do. It takes a lot of work, and it's easier and cheaper just to buy a wider boat. I see that comment all the time. A lot of people talk about that. It's not 150,000,000% not true. Now, it does make your boat longer, and it will probably feel like it's a little bit more stable side to side, but it's not. It's all in your head. So that was a great little firsthand experience from one of our YouTube viewers. I'm glad that he left that. Another comment said, hey, man, that 3M and aluminum rivet combo works really well. That's basically how we keep aircraft together. So why the hell wouldn't it work on a boat? Makes for an easiest replacement if you crunch one. I'd say probably a good 10, 12 comments from different people that work in the airline industry. And that was one of their common things that they commented was, this is what we do in the airline industry. And we got $1 million planes that are put together with glue and rivets. So why is everybody freaking out about them on a boat? I agree 100%. If they trust rivets and glue on airplanes, why can't you trust it on a boat? As long as you're, you know, kind of smart about it. Don't do anything stupid and put a giant hole in your float pod that you can't seal up really well. And you should be fine. So glad to see some people from the aircraft industry jumping in on here and leaving their two cents. Another comment right here about the awesomeness of 3M 5200. He said, we use it to bed sailboat winches into the deck and they never come off. That is impressive because sailboats are really, really heavy, if you don't know. And those winches are under a ton of pressure. And they're gluing winches onto the front of these really expensive, really big, and really heavy sailboats. That's very impressive. Another comment about 3M 5200, talking about how awesome it is, and some fiberglass companies use it to put the top caps onto their hulls, and they also use them to waterproof portholes and hull intrusions. And he did mention, he said, you got to remember, it takes a week to cure, but it is really good stuff. That is one of the things that I've had some personal experience with. They make two versions of 3M 5200. They make the regular 3M 5200, which is the white and blue labeled one, which does cure. It really does take about a week to cure. Usually when I install that regular 3M 5200, I can still feel how soft it is after a day or two. It doesn't really get to where you can touch it until usually that second day. But it's not even anywhere near being cured until a week. So that's one of the downsides to it. They do make a fast cured version of it. And I think it works equally as well, but I don't know long term if it's as good as the regular 3M 5200. I've only had one confirmed incident where somebody glued I think it was one of those little transom saver pads where you put your transducer on it, on the back of their boat, and they used the fast cure version. And it did pop off eventually, but that was like a year or two down the road. And I had no clue how many times they smacked that transducer little pad into stumps and whatever else. If it's me in my boat, I'm always going to use the regular 3M 5200 because I have a lot of confidence in it and I've got a lot of experience with it. And it doesn't make me, you know, second guess whether it's going to hold up or not. I probably wouldn't lose any sleep if I had to use the fast cure version. Maybe just be a little bit more careful with it, but I still think that it would hold up just fine. So we got another commenter here that left us their story of putting pods on their, I think it was a 15-foot tracker topper. He said, I did it mainly because of adding the 670, which he's talking about his Predator mud motor. Although the added weight from the 420 really wasn't that much different. Still waiting on a cam for the 670. So what he's talking about is he's got the 670 V-twin version of the Harbor Freight engine versus the weight of the 420, which is the 13 horse version. So he's got a 22 horse now. He had a 13 horse, and the weight difference wasn't a ton, but there was enough weight to where he felt like he needed to put pods on the back of the boat. He did say in the comment, one performance negative with mine is that in a hard turn, it will slide and bulldoze water instead of tilting like usual. Aside from that, everything else you said is absolutely correct. Again, Here's a classic example that not every single boat and every single pod installation is going to have positive effects. Now, he did say in his comment that he's happy with them, and he liked that it does, you know, float his 670 Predator motor a little bit higher in the water. But he did have one negative in that when he does take a hard turn, the boat wants to slide instead of grabbing the water and tilt. My boat, unfortunately, doesn't go that fast with my mud motor on the back of it. So I don't really know if that's 100% true or not. I have no reason to doubt this person. So again, just further proves my point that not every single pod installation is going to be exactly the same. So another guy said, can I fill the pods with ice and beer, or does that not help either? I actually had a ton of comments about this, and people were like, why don't you use them as extra storage and put like a hatch lid on top? And it's not a terrible idea. I'm not saying that you can't do that. The only reason that I didn't do it in my particular boat, because I did think about it for like a hot second. I was like, man, maybe I could put a couple of hatches back there. But the whole reason that I was putting the pods on my boat in the first place is the motor that will eventually wind up on my boat is going to be way too heavy for my boat. I'm too heavy for my boat. Like, I am overweight. And when I got heavy motor, heavy person, and all the junk that's in my boat just has enough weight in it already. I don't need to add storage in the back of the boat that will allow me to put even more weight in the back of the boat. Just kind of defeating the purpose of the pods in the first place. I'm trying to help the boat ride higher in the water and float up a little bit higher because of all the weight. If I just put storage back there and add more weight to the back of the boat, it just kind of leveling back out what I was before. I'm not saying that it's not a bad idea. Like, if you want to put, you know, little hatches back there and put, you know, turn one of them into a cooler, you can do that. It's not a bad idea. I actually kind of like it. Not saying that I would ever do it, but it's not bad. So here's another one kind of along that same line. This guy said, I would weld them on, plug the hole on the bottom, but extend them to the top level with the transom and connect an aluminum tube inside the boat to put on both of them and use it as a gas tank. I'm not saying that you can't do that. That's actually not a bad idea. If you need that much fuel in your boat and you don't have room for a gas tank inside your boat, weld some pods on the back of your boat and make them an external gas tank. I think that's a great idea. Keep in mind that you are using them for a different purpose than what they were originally designed for, and you may not get the benefits of having float pods on in the first place, which is to help raise your boat up higher in the water. But again, not a bad idea at all. Like, I'm not even mad about it. And we got another 3M 5200 boat. This one's actually from the boating industry. This guy said, I work in the boating industry. We build 48-foot open cockpit offshore fishing boats. We have a composite sandwich boat hull. When we lifted the hickory veneered plywood laminated bulkheads into the boat with a crane, we used 3M 5200 to bed the bulkheads into the inside of the hull. It can fill big gaps and retain structural integrity. It took forever to cure, but it was solid. If we tried to use fiberglass resin, it would have thermally reacted out of control and bubbled up. There was so much mass, it may have even caught on fire. So we used 3M 5200. The stuff is really strong and it works. So we're getting a lot of people jumping in here and talking about how good 3M 5200 is, and they're doing it from a perspective of they use this stuff for a living in the airline industry, and now we got somebody in the boating industry. And this is not the only comment that I saw from people that were in the boating industry talking about where they use 3M 5200. Like, people severely underestimate how strong that stuff is. I could have probably gotten away with just 3M 5200 on these pods and not even used rivets. The rivets were just kind of extra insurance. I honestly, truly believe, and I may even have to test this someday, put some 3M 5200 on the back of a boat and put some pods on there and see how long they hold up. That'd be kind of interesting to see. It would be a long-term project because we'd have to use it a lot for many, many years to make sure that it actually works. But, you know, we're getting a lot of great feedback on the use of 5200 and how well it works. Now, one of the things that I talked about in this video, and I had a lot of comments on the very first pod video and on this one, about filling the pods up with foam or air. And this comment that I'm about to read is talking about that. He said, technically, the foam will give you less buoyancy because you're adding weight. Granted, it won't be perceivable because of the low weight, but technically, it does add more weight. So when you get into stuff like this, you're really splitting hairs. But no, you should never put anything inside your float pods unless you're going to turn them into some kind of storage hatch. Foam in a boat is for safety reasons. It's not for buoyancy when the boat is under normal use. It is for when you flood the boat or the boat gets, you know, swamped with rain while you're out fishing or you take on a big wave. The foam in your boat helps keep the boat afloat so that you can recover it. And that's called reserve buoyancy. It does not make the boat more stable. It doesn't make the boat float higher in the water, having foam in it. It's just a safety precaution. And it's one of those stupid laws that our government has forced boat builders to do. They have to put foam in all of these boats. So yeah, don't put anything in your boat. I had more than one comment. I was really shocked where people were like, won't you just like put a tire valve on there and fill them up full of air so you can get more buoyancy? And I'm like, you people on the internet are mildly retarded. And they all find my YouTube channel and then leave comments. That's why I stay so busy. We got another confirmation here. Somebody put in a comment, after watching this video, I got pods for my 1448 low and absolutely love them. Another comment here said, just got a pair of these and have yet to install them. The instructions that came with them states that you need to shim them if you have more than a half inch above a straight surface at the rear of the pods, that it could cause the boat to porpoise. Have you or anyone running an outboard saw this happen? I plan on doing mine the same way you did. So what he's talking about is when you mount the pods to the back of the boat, if you put the pods right up against your transom and the back of the pods don't come up at an angle, I think on my instructions, it said it needed to have at least a half inch of rise for every 6 inches or something like that. Well, my pods ended up rising at the very back about an inch and a half from the bottom surface of the boat. So mine were good to go right out of the box. I didn't need to do any shim. And I've talked to my good buddy, White River Rambo, Dustin. He's told me about this, and he's done a lot more pod installs than I have because he actually does them on customer boats. And in certain cases, he will have to go in and put a shim in between the transom, the back transom skin of the boat, and the float pod itself to help get the back of that float pod to rise at enough angle. Another thing that he's told me that he does, and I've seen a lot of other people do this, is instead of mounting the pod level with the bottom of the boat like I did, you can move them up an inch, maybe 2 inches, so that while you're sitting still and you're in the water, the float pods will still give you that extra, you know, lift in the back of the boat that you need. But as soon as you get up on plane, with them being an inch or two higher than the bottom of the boat, they are completely out of the water and they're not affecting your outboard performance at all. But Dustin did tell me that he has seen quite a few cases where people installed the pods wrong and they didn't have enough rise in the back of them, and they did cause porpoising issues. I'm not super big into outboards to know the exact reason why they cause porpoising, which by porpoising, if you're not familiar, that means where you're trying to go full speed and the front of the boat is just slapping the water and popping up and slapping the water. It's really annoying, and it sucks to ride in a boat that porpoises like that. Again, he has some videos on it, and he could probably explain it a lot better than I can. He's got a lot more experience with outboards than I do. I stick to mostly mud motors, and it's just not really my thing. So another comment here. Guy said, I run an Excel. It came with built-in pods. I'm an old man, and it's nice to have them to get on and off the boat. So that's another reason that a lot of people put pods on the back, is if you don't have a boat with a step transom, they do kind of act as a step. And that's a nice little feature that you can have in a pod. Specifically, he's talking about the Excel. The last couple of years, I have noticed that, and I even filmed a short video on this the last time I went to, I think it was the East Tennessee Fishing Show, and I saw the new low roughneck boats had pods on the back. And lo and behold, I go walk up and I look at them, and they were not even riveted to the back of the boat. They were put on with screws. I'm talking self-tapping screws. Now, they did have a couple models that had rivets in them, but basically what it is, they took the pod, and instead of it being flat on the back, they had this little flange built into it so that you could bolt them or screw them or rivet them into the back of the boat without ever having to access the inside of the transom. And when I saw that, I was like, holy crap. Why didn't I ever think of that? That would have been a super easy mod that I could have done. But now Lowe is doing it on their boats, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, all right, so I'm not stupid. I'm not the only person in the world that thinks that these don't have to be welded on the back of the boats, because Lowe is doing it from the factory. So I'll probably put that little video clip that I got from that Lowe boat at the fishing show into the next pod video that we do when we do the update. Yeah, that's becoming a thing now. I didn't know Excel was doing it, but I've seen it on Lowe's. And there was one other boat that I saw it on. I can't remember which boat it was right off the top of my head. But the pods are definitely getting popular. And see, on the Lowe boat, they're not very big. They look more like they were designed to be a step. I don't know if they, you know, kind of use that to help add some weight rating to the boat for the Coast Guard purposes. I'm not really sure how all that works. I'm not gotten into the Coast Guard certification stuff yet, but that may be one reason why they do it. And that's becoming a thing now. Here's a random, just off the wall comment. This is funny. Like when I go through and read these YouTube comments, it cracks me up sometimes. Cause I'll make a video like very dedicated to the subject of float pods, like this video. Like I didn't talk about anything in this video except float pods. And I'll get these random comments like this one that says, you should try building a steering console next. That would be every poor man's dream boat. Like what part of your brain was saying, I'm watching this video about float pods. I'm going to tell this guy he needs to build a steering console. I don't know how the two of those connect at all or what this guy was thinking. But anyways, on that subject, we are going to be building a inshore saltwater skiff boat coming up soon, probably before the summer-ish of 2025. And that is one of my goals, is to show you how to build a center console. And it will be done with rivets. I don't know if we're going to do 5200. It's definitely going to be rivets, no welding. It will be a pretty cool. And if it works out, I don't know if I can make this work or not, but I got a design idea in my head. If it works out, it may actually be a product that we sell here at Tiny Boat Nation in the future. Maybe, possibly, I don't know, but it's something that I'm working on. It's a do-it-yourself, build at home with all rivets, center console for boats. So that's something that's coming. Thank you for the random comment on my float pod video about center consoles. Another float pod user here commented, I added foam to the entire inside of mine and then covered it with some thin ply and lots of sealer. Only thing I've ever used foam for. Just in case something catastrophic happens, my boat at least won't go all the way and recovery will hopefully be easier. That's a little excessive there, buddy. I don't know why you felt the need to put foam and plywood and sealer inside your pods. You know, it's your boat. It's your pods. If you want to do that, it's perfectly fine. It's not anything that I would ever recommend anybody do, but I will give you a real life example of exactly what he is talking about. I went on a fishing trip about 3 weeks ago, and I should not have gone out. The winds were sustained between 30 and 37 miles an hour with gusts up in the mid 40s. And I was going to go anchor up and go catfishing like an idiot. I don't know why I thought this was a great idea. It was the first warm day that we had had all winter long. And I, for those that don't know me, I cannot stand being cold. I hate wintertime. Like it almost makes me depressed because I don't want to be outside. I'm like a freaking lizard or a snake. It 60 degrees is about my limit. Once it gets below 59, 60 degrees, like I don't want to go outside anymore. I can't stand it. My bones get cold and I can never get warm again. And it's miserable to have to dress warm to go outside to do something for a little bit and then come back inside where the heat's roaring. And then next thing you know, you're sweating and then you get even colder because you were sweating. It's just I hate the cold. If it was 90 to 100 degrees every single day for the rest of my life, I wouldn't complain at all. I love it. But anyways, back to the story. I was out fishing in these ridiculous conditions that I should not have been. And when I finally called it quits after a couple of hours, because one, the fish weren't biting, and two, there were waves like literally coming up the side of my boat and splashing inside the boat. I was like, this is just not worth it anymore. I took the boat back over to the dock. And my first idea, which was also really stupid, if you hadn't figured out, I'm not that bright sometimes. And this is one of those moments. So my first idea was I was going to use my trolling motor and spot lock it right near the dock while I go get my truck. Why I thought that my spot lock was going to hold my boat still and not bash into the dock at 37 mile an hour winds. I don't know what I was thinking, but that's the first thing that I did. So I got off the boat, spot locked it. I got off the boat and started walking down the dock. And all I could hear was the side of my boat slamming into the dock and my trolling motor just at full speed, just whee, trying to keep the boat away from the dock. And it wasn't happening. So I went back over and got in the boat and decided to tie it off. And I heard something odd while I was tying the boat off. I wasn't 100% sure what it was. My hearing is not that great. But I did hear something that it sounded like it hit something and then something went, but I wasn't like really sure. So I just like, screw it. I'm just going to tie the boat up real quick. I went and got the truck. When I pulled the boat out of the water on the trailer, I walked around to the back of the boat to tie my mud motor up. And I saw that both of my float pods had no drain plugs in them anymore. I'm assuming that at some point while it was going up underneath the dock and hitting the pilings on the dock, the drain plugs got ripped out. The pods were completely filled with water. The boat never sank. It didn't even look like any different than it normally is. So I'm assuming that water poured into the float pod up to the level of the water on the boat, like where the water line normally is on the boat, but nothing ever happened. Like I got in the boat, drove it up, you know, I actually pulled away from the dock, drove around in a big circle so that I could straighten it back out because I don't have reverse on my mud motor, and drove it straight up onto the trailer with no issues. Had I not heard the water pouring out of the float pods, I never would have known that my drain plugs were gone. So I don't know if filling them with foam and all this extra is really needed, because I personally have experienced, this is not the first time I've done this. I forgot my drain plugs one time, and I rode around for an entire day on a fishing trip up and down the river with no plugs in my drain pods, or with no plugs in my float pods. And I never even noticed it. They still floated just fine. The boat didn't sink. So yeah, if you want to do this to your boat, you go right ahead. I don't really think it's necessary. So one of the comments they got was asking for a recommendation. It said, I have a 1432 flat bottom John boat looking to put a mud skipper surface drive with a 13 horsepower twin. I don't know why. I don't know anybody that makes a 13 horsepower twin. I'm assuming he was talking about the Harbor Freight 13 horsepower Predator motor, which is a single cylinder. And he said it weighs 85 pounds and the surface drive weighs approximately 76 pounds and I weigh 200. Would I need to add float pod devices to the back of the boat? Anxiously awaiting your reply. I love your show. Blah, 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 blah. So I had multiple comments like this where people were like, hey, this is my boat setup. Do I need float pods? The answer is, I don't know. Like, that's something that you're going to have to figure out on your own. And the way that if I were in that situation and I wanted to figure out whether I needed float pods or not, the way that I would figure it out is exactly how this guy did. I would go in, I figure out what the weight of my motor is. If you're using a mud motor kit, you're going to need to know the motor itself, the engine, whether it's a 13 horse, a 22 horse, or whatever engine you're going to use. You need to know the weight of that. You need to know the weight of the kit that you're using, and add those together plus your weight. If you're using an outboard, you can just look up what your outboard weighs, or there's resources online where you can figure out what the weight is. Look at the capacity sticker on your boat. If you or your motor is more than the weight of what it is rated for, and you don't want to get a bigger boat and you're going to do something stupid anyways, I would probably be on the safe side and put pods on there. So I go by weight. You know, like if you got an 80 pound surface drive and an 80 pound motor that goes on that surface drive, you know, that's 160 pounds. If your boat is rated for, let's just say, for instance, these numbers are probably not correct, but let's just say your boat's rated for a 9.9. Well, if you look up the weight of a 9.9 and it's 100 pounds, you're 60 pounds overweight. I would probably recommend that, yeah, you get some float pods or go to a bigger boat and kind of weigh the pros and cons. Because like if you're going to do float pods and you want to go get them welded, so you got to look at the price of the float pods. They're, you know, $200-$400 depending on which ones you buy. And then if you want to get them welded, you got to figure out if you don't have welding equipment, what it's going to cost to weld those on. And you know, some shops might charge $300-$600 just depending. So let's just say you got $800 in the installations of float pods with welding them on a little 1436 John boat. Well, guess what? A 1436 John boat is like a $500, maybe $1,000 John boat at most. Do you really want to put the total value of the boat into these float pods? Or do you want to just sell the boat and save up a little bit of money and get a bigger boat so that you don't need to do the float pods in the first place? But I mean, if you're on a budget, it's, you know, so you gotta use your little budget hands. Go, do I really, you know, want to just modify the boat that I have to make it work? Or do I want to just not go through this headache of trying to install them or weld them on and just get a bigger boat? Most of the time, my recommendation is get a bigger boat for any reason other than bigger boats are more stable. And I'm not very nimble. Like when I get on a boat, even when I was kayaking, I used to kayak fish a lot. I had a really nice kayak that was super, super stable, but I was not stable. I did not feel comfortable like leaning over really far or standing up in it because I just don't have very good balance. And in small boats, even my boat being 48 inches wide, like I get to the very edge of the boat, and I lose my balance very easily and feel like I might fall in. So for me, I would always pick a bigger boat over going with pods, but that's not for everybody. So just think about it before you jump into pods and all the installation things that you're going to have to think about. So another commenter asks, are the float pods that extend across the full width of the transom like a rear platform? What he's talking about is a hunt deck. And there's a big difference between a hunt deck and a float pod. A float pod is just, you know, there's two of them and they go on each corner. So that, of course, they look different than a hunt deck, which goes all the way across the back of the boat. A hunt deck is actually, if it's built correctly, it is part of the boat. So when they cut the holes, just say you have a boat that's going to be 18 foot long and they want to have a 2 foot hunt deck on the back. What they'll do is they'll leave the hull at the factory 20 foot long they will cut a notch 2 foot into the back of the boat so that the boat hull on the bottom all the way to the back where that hunt deck is one solid piece. It's not something that's bolted on, riveted on, or welded on after the fact. So the hunt deck is really just an extension of the boat, but it's still part of the boat. And they're really popular on mud style boats because they will, you know, act as like a step to get in and out of the back of the boat. But they also allow you to have a low transom height on the very back of the boat so that you can sit down and run your motor without having to hit your elbow and arm and stuff on the transom. But then at the very back of the hunt deck, they will have a raised transom piece where your motor actually bolts on so that you can run a tall outboard, which is very, very common, a long shaft outboard, or for a surface drive, they're usually long shaft versions as well. So hunt decks, float pods are two totally different things. Now, I am probably going to be doing a hunt. I'm not going to call it a hunt deck. It's basically just one giant float pod on the back of the boat. I'm going to be doing that on a boat soon, and it will be welded on. It can be done. It's a little bit more of a complicated install, and you pretty much have to weld it. It's not something that I would bolt onto the back of the boat. I'm sure somebody's done it out there, and it may work great. But in order for it to truly be a hunt deck and function the way that it was designed, it needs to be the same level and size as the back of your boat is, just basically an extension of the boat hull itself. It can definitely be done, but it's something that needs to be welded on, not riveted on. Yeah, there is well over 1,000 comments on this. I'm not going to go through every single one of them. I think I hit the most important ones to try to give you some more information, more in-depth look at putting float pods on a John boat. If you are watching this podcast on YouTube and you enjoyed it or you have any questions, please leave me a comment. Give me some feedback. I love reading people's comments. If you are on one of the podcast platforms, please take just a moment and give me a rating so that the podcast platforms like Spotify and Google and Apple Podcasts will see those ratings and hopefully show it to more people so that more people can find out about this podcast and listen to it. Don't forget to check out our wonderful channels sponsors. So thank you all very much for listening. I hope that I was able to at least give you some entertainment, if not teach you a thing or two about float pods on a John boat. And I look forward to talking to you guys on the next podcast.